More Chinese military drills after Taiwan's president visits the United States. The latest escalation between Beijing and Washington over the island. As the two superpowers pull in opposite directions, where does Taiwan's future lie? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the program. I'm Nick Clark. So the waters and airspace around Taiwan are once again the setting for military muscle flexing in a standoff between China and the US-backed island. Chinese naval vessels and warplanes have been simulating strikes with Taiwanese fighter jets and gunboats scrambled in response. Beijing is furious after Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen met the US House Speaker Kevin McCarthy in California last week. The drills are the latest move in a tug of war between China and the United States over the island. Only a handful of countries recognize Taiwan's independence, but the Biden administration has become much more engaged in its affairs following on the Trump presidency's support for the island. Well, China considers Taiwan part of its territory and has not ruled out using force to take it. But many Taiwanese consider themselves independent and reject Beijing's policy of one country, two systems. In response to the drills, people in Taipei say they switch between fear and indifference.
The president traveling to different countries has the effect of increasing international awareness of Taiwan. Of course, verbal and military intimidation from China can't be avoided. But I think because this intimidation has been going on for such a long time, it's impossible to ignore.
To constantly talk about unification is quite unnecessary, or rather, there is no absolute need for this. Also, China is talking about unification while threatening military action, which is quite pointless. I think it's more important for us to live our lives as we are currently and have Taiwan achieve a bigger position on the international stage.
However, some Taiwanese are unhappy with the increased Western military involvement and would prefer better political relations with Beijing. About 40% of Taiwan's exports go to China. In 2021, that was worth nearly $190 billion. That's three times more than it sells to the United States. In this footage from the Chinese state broadcaster CGTN, some people gathered at Taipei Airport to protest against President Tsai's visit to California. Here's what they had to say.
The Tsai-McCarthy meeting will cause conflict across the Taiwan Straits. It can't bring peace if you're going to start a cross-straits conflict and ignite a war. What kind of democracy is there without peace?
Tsai Ing-wen, go back to the US. The US is your home. If the Chinese mainland imposes sanctions on the Taiwan region, all the consequences will be borne by its people, while Tsai Ing-wen herself bears no loss.
Well, it's a big, important story, so let's take it on. Joined now by our guests in New York, we have Victor Gao, who's vice president of the Center for China and Globalization and former officer with the Chinese Foreign Service. In Miami is June Teufel-Dreher, a professor of political science at the University of Miami and a senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute. June is also the author of the upcoming book, China's Political System. And in Taipei, in Taiwan, is Brian Hu, founder and editor of New Bloom magazine. It is an online publication that focuses on Taiwan and the Asia-Pacific. Brian is also a non-resident fellow at Nottingham University's Taiwan Studies program. Welcome to all of you. Victor, I'd like to start with you to begin looking at the push and the pull here. So Taiwan sees itself as independent. China's president, Xi Jinping, says it's a breakaway province and reunification with Taiwan must be fulfilled in his lifetime. My question is, why though? Why unification? What's wrong with the status quo?
Thank you very much for having me. First of all, no country in the world can recognize either China and Taiwan at the same time because it is a universal principle that there is only one China and Taiwan is part of the China. This has been the US policy ever since January the 1st, 1979. This is also the same policy for all the NATO member states, all OECD countries, and every country within the United Nations. You mentioned there is about a dozen countries in the world still recognizing Taiwan but they do not recognize Taiwan as a separate, independent, sovereign country. They also recognize that Taiwan as the representative of China, which is completely illogical in the world of today. Therefore, the so-called meeting between Tsai Ing-wen, the local leader of Taiwan, with Speaker McCarthy in California, is a violation of this sacred principle of the One China policy and Taiwan being part of China. Tsai Ing-wen right, holds
let,
herself
let me, Victor, let me throw that immediately over to... Plenty of time to talk through all the other issues, but let me just throw that over to Brian Hugh, if I may. Brian, your response to that.
Yeah, so China frequently conflates its One China principle with One China policy. One China principle is China's policy. One China policy is the U.S. They are not the same. However, China frequently seeks to conflate the two, as though it were some internationally acknowledged belief then that Taiwan is part of China. One looks at history. Although Taiwan was controlled, or at least parts of Taiwan were controlled by Chinese empires in the past, it seems a bit strange then to claim that the CCP, the polity that overthrew the Qing Empire, the polity that then controlled part of Taiwan, should then inherit these claims of a pre-modern empire. In that case, then, often the claim is Taiwan's a province of China. When you look at Chinese history, Taiwan was only a province of China from 1887 to 1895, following which it was ceded to the Japanese. And so Taiwan has a different history than China, than the Chinese mainland. And it is historical then that China now claims Taiwan as part of it, despite the insistence of the PRC that Taiwan's been part of China since time immemorial.
So June, a lot of controversy over individual claims. It seems that the status quo, such as it is, will be hard to maintain.
The status quo has always changed. And it starts out with China being weak, and although continuing to claim erroneously that Taiwan is part of it, it does nothing. And then as the Chinese themselves acknowledged quietly at the time, as the island of Taiwan became more and more democratic, and as the Taiwanese majority took over by democratic elections, by the way, peaceful democratic elections, that the Taiwanese would be more and more reluctant to keep pretending that Taiwan were part of China. And as for Mr. Gao's comment, in international relations, Mr. Gao, there is no such thing as sacred. So to say that something is somebody's sacred territory is erroneous. I suppose Rome could lay claim to large parts of the world on the basis of the Roman Empire, but fortunately it is not foolish enough to do so.
So it's very clear, the debate over Taiwan. I want to move away a little bit over the individual claims and on to why now Taiwan is important economically. Brian, tell us what position Taiwan has in the world economically. It's incredibly important, isn't it? Because it makes microchips for computers and laptops and phones and all sorts.
Yeah, that's right. And so in the past few years, there's been much more focus on, for example, that Taiwan produces over 90% of the world's advanced semiconductors and around 65% of global supply. But looking at it, Chinese territorial claims over Taiwan do precede Taiwan's current dominance in terms of semiconductor manufacturing. And so the fact that semiconductors, which Taiwan manufactures, powers everything from your iPhone to your electric car to your PS4 or 5, that's actually only part of the picture. And so one of the views then is that China seeks to expand power, expand maritime power, and that Taiwan, as part of the island chains in this way, that is something that Taiwan, China needs for its geostrategic ambitions to expand power through the Pacific Ocean. But then there are different views. I mean, part of it is nationalism, part of it is the economic interest and so forth. But there's also the geostrategic element there.
Okay, I just want to move on to the strategic importance that you've been alluding to there, Brian. We can call up a map now, I think, and see the island of Taiwan. And you can see that on that map, you can see the Philippines, where the US has military bases. Guam is further out in the Pacific, also has a military base there. Victor, the US concern is that if Taiwan came under Chinese rule, China would then be free to project power in the Western Pacific region, which is very clear from that map. And certainly, as we can see, it would open the way, wouldn't it?
Well, allow me to make two points. First of all, I hope the panelists would study history, because the United States has been talking about the world order since the end of the Second World War. The status of Taiwan, among other things, traces all the way back to the Cairo Declaration and the Potsdam Declaration, mandating that Japan need to unconditionally surrender Taiwan, which it occupied between 1895 to 1845. And this is the cornerstone of the international order that we are still living in. So if anyone wants to violate the international rules and the international order, then they are talking about treating Taiwan as a separate, independent, sovereign country. Secondly, I cannot say I love California so much and Silicon Valley so much, so I want to supply arms to the Californians to urge their independence from the Union, because that completely is ridiculous, and no American would ever accept that. So how can anyone say, I love Taiwan so much, semiconductors are so important, so let's treat Taiwan as a separate, independent, sovereign country? You are not God. You cannot dictate which piece of territory is Chinese or not. You need to use international instruments. You need to use history. You need to use your common sense. That's
okay.
Why.
Victor, let me jump in there. I just want to come back to the question I actually asked you, which was we were looking at a map. Victor, let me just come in. We were just looking at a map, and I just wanted to ask you about the strategic importance of Taiwan and the clear interest it would have in China assuming control of it, so as a gateway to the Western Pacific.
That's for sure. But you cannot say this territory is so strategically important that it should not be Chinese territory. That's completely overturning the international order we are living through. Because if you follow this as the logic, then I would say California is so important, I need to urge for the independence of California or Texas, for example, or any other piece of territory which belongs to a sovereign independent country. That doesn't make any sense. Americans will not have it. Why should the Americans be happy with taking Taiwan away from China? It's a mission.
Okay, so June, let me bring in June now. So June, as far as the United States is concerned and its Pacific strategy is concerned, Taiwan is essential to keep on side, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Furthermore, I too have studied history, Mr. Gao, and I think that you have not. The Cairo Proclamation and the Potsdam Proclamation are not the peace treaty. The peace treaty was the Treaty of San Francisco, in which Japan said that it forswore the possession of Taiwan, but it did not say who should Taiwan be returned to. So I don't think China has a claim in international law. And as for arguing in terms of international law, the People's Republic of China saw fit to absolutely disagree with the Permanent Court of Arbitration in the dispute with the Philippines over China's nine-dash line. And that's not the only instance of China ignoring international law. So I think your arguments do not hold. And furthermore, California has not exhibited the slightest desire to secede from the United States. And as for the representative of an atheist country, invoking sacred principles and God seems a very peculiar thing to do.
Okay, let's move away from historical claims to Taiwan. Now, it's clearly an area of disagreement, so I think we'll just have to agree to disagree on that. I know it's a big issue, but we've only got a short program, so we need to move on. So, Brian Hugh, President Tsai, according to some, are making things more dangerous by courting the United States, and that includes the opposition party within Taiwan. What do you make of all of that?
Yeah, the opposition party, the KMT, or the Chinese Nationalist Party, was the former authoritarian party in Taiwan. And though it still exists after democratization, it has continued to insist that its claim to power be justified on being the only party able to communicate with the CCP on an equal basis, on a party-to-party basis. But this circumvents Taiwan's contemporary democratic institutions, not going through a democratically elected government, for example, but directly sending over party officials to talk with the CCP. And so then the KMT and supporters often will allege the DPP, which is currently in favor of strengthening ties with the U.S., to have allies with Western powers, with Japan, other Asia-Pacific countries also facing the threat of China, with shared democratic values to ward off Chinese aggression. It will claim that this is warmongering, that this is actually provoking China, and so that it should be restored to power, that it should hold power because it can ward off China, and that China will not be aggressive towards Taiwan after that. But one recently saw the visit to China of former President Ma Ying-jeou, the last KMT president, saying that he hoped to reduce cross-strait tensions, and yet China launched these drills anyway. This took place at the same place, same time as Tsai Ing-wen, the president's visit to the U.S. But despite the fact that Ma visited China and hoped to reduce cross-strait tensions, China, the Chinese government, still saw fit to declare military exercises against Taiwan.
June, I'm just wondering, those that suggest that President Tsai is making things more dangerous by courting the United States, would they be happy for China to assume control of Taiwan, or is it more a case of just, you know, ratcheting down the tensions and the rhetoric?
I think there's no doubt that the tensions, everyone wants the tensions to be eased. But as Mr. Hu has pointed out, Ma Ying-jeou's visit did not ease the tension. And I always ask myself, when someone says, well, is this a provocative move? What's the alternative? So is Tsai supposed to sit back and wait while the PRC tries to buy away China's Taiwan's remaining allies that recognize it as the government of the Republic of China? Or does she do something? And what she does is she goes to those countries, making stopovers with the United States, at two places in the United States. And China says, you can't do this. In other words, China is trying to create the impression that it already is in charge of Taiwan. And she has to do something against that. And the problem with Ma Ying-jeou is that under his presidency, the tensions were indeed reduced by giving China whatever it wanted. And that's the reason when he left office, his popularity ratings were down toward the single digits. And as someone said at the time, he could not get elected dog catcher. And here he is portraying himself as the representative of the righteous opposition in Taiwan. It won't work.
Victor, what's your assessment of these tensions right now and where we're at, and just potentially how dangerous things are? Is it always just tit for tat? We get a, you know, some kind of meeting between the Taiwanese leadership and the United States representatives in some shape or form, and then so China, they ramp up some military exercises and drills. Is that just going to continue, or is it becoming more dangerous?
Thank you very much for asking this very important question. But before I get to your question, allow me to mention one point. With due respect to June, I hope she will hire a lawyer, because she is not talking about the legal status in the clearly legal terms. I'm registered as an attorney of law in the state of New York. I think I know what I'm talking about. She is not talking about the real legal status of the situation involving the island of Taiwan. Read the Cairo Declaration and read the Potsdam Declaration.
Okay,
and
you all right. Know so, Victor, we've already, sure please move on now. We've already been through this. And I did ask for you to not get into all of this, because
unconditional surrender. But all sides have had... This is the cornerstone of the international order we are living through. Now, talking about what will happen each time the United States violates the One China policy, including Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan last year in August, including Speaker McCarthy's meeting with local leader of Tsai Ing-wen of Taiwan, then China will be fully justified to move one step closer to exercising real administration of the island of Taiwan, eventually, in all respects. This is irreversible. each violation, each provocation will result in consequences that the United States will not be able to bear, because the United States will not send its soldiers to fight for the separatism and independence of Taiwan, because the United States, ever since 1979, has legally and internationally acknowledged that there is only one China and Taiwan is part of China. The current position of the U.S. government is a position of illegitimacy and illogicality and complete confusing itself, confusing the separatists in Taiwan, confusing the U.S. allies, as if, for example, the U.S. soldiers will shed blood and lose their lives for the independence and separatism of Taiwan. The exact legal status of the cross-strait relations is an unfinished civil war.
Victor, you've had plenty of time. Brian, illogical and confusing. Yeah.
Well, I mean, to jump in there, then Victor's comments goes to show that often the Chinese government will cite history selectively or cite what it claims to be international law. It will claim the U.S. is violating the rules-based order of the international order when convenient for it. But other points, it will say that, well, it's us that's in the right. It's very selective there. But then I would remind Victor then that he often likes to talk about as though it's the U.S. that will lose lives. It will actually be Taiwanese people. But more than that, I think he should think about his own countrymen. A recent CSIS study had 70,000 Chinese deaths from an invasion, because a beachhead invasion is very difficult to carry out. It's bloody. It would be the most massive invasion since D-Day. There are accounts that are higher. So are you willing to sacrifice that amount of young people for a piece of land that the modern PRC has never controlled in its history? Sacrifice these people for nationalism because you claim this piece of land is yours, never mind the will of self-determination of the people that live there and have lived there perhaps for hundreds of years, who have never been part of the PRC. And in that sense, these are also principles that come up in the UN, the principle of self-determination. These are things that are valued. And I think the question he should ask of himself and others like him is, are you willing to sacrifice these Chinese young people, their blood, meaninglessly for taking Taiwan, which you have never controlled? And often, it'll be brutal. Can the CCP maintain legitimacy, political legitimacy, after such an invasion? That's to be questioned.
June, I want to move away from this talk of warfare and the numbers of dead on the beach. Can I just ask you, the bottom line is, doesn't Taiwan need more exchanges with China to perhaps understand its neighbor better and reduce risks through dialogue?
No, I mean, because China has made its condition for dialogue that Taiwan accept its definition of the one China policy. And this is akin to saying, we're not going to talk to you unless you agree with everything we've said beforehand. By the way, Mr. Gao, you have misstated the U.S.'s one China policy. The United States has not said it agrees with China's one China policy, which is that there is one China and Taiwan is part of China. The United States has said it acknowledges that this is the way the Chinese government feels about it. It has not said it agrees with it, only that it acknowledges the existence of the Chinese government's position.
Victor Gao, would you like to respond to that briefly?
Absolutely. If I acknowledge that the sun rises in the east, do I need to further agree with that? Come on. The U.S. position is a trilogy. It's based on three basic principles. One is that there is only one China. Second, Taiwan is part of China. And the third point, which is equally important, that the United States acknowledges that the government of the People's Republic of China is the sole legitimate representative of China. That's all. It's a three parts combining to one. It's kind of a trinity principle. If you want to read the real legal status of Taiwan, read these trinity principles. And I don't think June or people like her do not know how to read English. At least she knows how to read English. So read the three communiques which form the basis of China-U.S. relations. The United States did the right thing in 1979 to abandon Taiwan, to withdraw all U.S. troops from Taiwan, to cancel the U.S.-Taiwan diplomatic relations, extend further to abrogate the U.S.-Taiwan Defense Treaty. How many times did the United States bend backward to do these things impossible? For what? For recognizing that the People's Republic of China is the sole legitimate representative of China, and there is only one China in the world, and Taiwan is part of China.
Okay, that's it. So look, we're running out of time. Victor, we're running out of time. We're coming to the end of the program. I've got to allow Brian to respond to that. So Victor, please, I'm going to cut in there. Brian, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, I'll leave it brief. I would just ask Victor to think again about the young Chinese lives that will be dying for a meaningless nationalist cause. Again, as a Taiwanese person, I do not view myself as Chinese. But again, I do not think that this is a worthwhile loss of life, of Chinese lives, of Taiwanese lives, of anything, for this abstract principle. I'll leave it at that.
June, the fundamental question, what is your sense of where Taiwan's future lies? Given all the tensions and all the pressures and all the disagreement and the controversy, how do you see its future?
I see its future as being, in Tsai Ing-wen's words, we do not seek confrontation, we do not seek unification. We want to be as we have been since 1912, since the fall of the Qing Dynasty, an independent sovereign state.
And all of this is going to be tested at a political level, June, isn't it, with elections in January?
Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up, because my own experience, having been an election observer in at least 4 and maybe 5 Taiwan elections, is that cross-strait relations actually plays a very little part in people's choices. What they care about is potholes in the road, good schools for their children, and environmental concerns. And they do not want to be part of China, and it would be very difficult for the United States to surrender that position. We can't give in on that. It would be against all of our principles. And yes, lives would be lost, but okay. What is the alternative? Enslavement to China, the way Hong Kong has had to happen to it? No.
All right, Victor, same question to you. Where does Taiwan's future lie?
When you really want to think about Taiwan, Taiwan will never be allowed as a separate, independent, sovereign nation away from China, because there is only one China. Taiwan is part of China, and the government of the People's Republic of China is generally, universally acknowledged as the sole legitimate government of China. So Don't urge people to fight against this megatrend. I believe June will live to see the reunification of China during her lifetime.
That's all right, we're going to leave it there. Thank you to all our guests, to Victor Gao, to June Teufel-Dreher, and to Brian Hugh. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see this program again at any time by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, just go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Nick Clark, and the whole team here, it's goodbye for now.